I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, October Surprise. New developments in the push for a debate between vice presidential picks Tim Walz and J.D. Vance. Speaking out, a Democrat from Illinois is demanding answers amid recent developments regarding the court case of September 11th terror suspects. A moving experience. Learn more about the house believed to have been the site of the Blessed Virgin's childhood and spiritual direction. Pope Francis reminds the faithful what happens when we ask the Virgin Mary for help. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Solemnity of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Our top story tonight, President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris team up in Maryland to announce price cuts for popular Medicare drugs. But first, the president takes another swipe at former President Donald Trump while answering a question from EWTN. White House correspondent Owen Jensen shares that reaction.
That's right, Tracy. As President Biden was leaving for his event today, I was able to ask him about both Trump and Harris. Now, the conversation only lasted a few seconds, but it yielded this. Take a listen.
Mr. Trump says he wants to make America affordable again. Your response?
So you ought to get a job.
When will the vice president hold the news conference?
You have to ask her.
A short while later, at Prince George's Community College, President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris talk about prescription prices after drug companies agreed to lower the cost for 10 of Medicare's most popular drugs.
And so Medicare has collective bargaining power. And now Medicare can use that power to go toe-to-toe with Big Pharma and negotiate lower drug prices.
Last year, Medicare spent $50 billion covering the drugs.
Folks, I have an incredible partner. The progress we've made, she's going to make one hell of a president.
Meanwhile, in western Pennsylvania, U.S. Senator J.D. Vance tells reporters the nation needs to care more for young families.
Very often, corporate America is not especially friendly to parents with young children, especially young moms with young children. And I think that we have to promote a culture of pro-family thinking and pro-family policy in this country where we see children as natural as blessings.
Vance, visiting a VFW, also recalls what happened 3 years ago this month in Afghanistan and criticizing Biden and Harris for what he called a total failure of leadership.
This is actually the three-year anniversary of when President Joe Biden got us out of Afghanistan in the most disgraceful way. And, of course, Kamala Harris was right there every step of the way.
And Vance held a moment of silence for the 13 American troops killed in the suicide bombing.
Amen. Thank you all. And thank you all for remembering them.
Meanwhile, former President Donald Trump invited reporters to his New Jersey golf club for another news conference. It's his second in as many weeks. He has criticized the vice president for not holding one. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, and staying on the campaign trail, Republican J.D. Vance and Democrat Tim Walz have agreed to a vice presidential debate. It will take place in October on the 1st on CBS News. In addition, there could be a second debate in mid-September on CNN. And now to the war in the Middle East and a grim milestone.
The people of Gaza are now grieving 40,000 Palestinian lives lost, according to Gaza's health ministry. Most of the dead are women and children. This unimaginable situation is overwhelmingly due to recurring failures by the Israeli Defense Forces to comply with the rules of war.
40,000 lives lost in the Israel-Hamas war, now in its 11th month. The announcement came as international mediators held a new round of talks in Qatar. It is a high-stakes push to end the war in Gaza and secure the release of more hostages, adding to the tension a possible retaliatory strike by Iran.
We have to assume, and the information that we have tells us, that Iran has not moved off its threat to launch some kind of an attack on Israel, perhaps even using their proxies as well, like Hezbollah or the Houthis. So our assumption is that their thinking is still in that vein, that they're going to do something, and it could happen, in coming days. It could come nearly at any time now.
Okay, for more, let's bring in Stephen Cook. He is an expert on U.S. Middle East policy at the Council of Foreign Relations. Stephen, good to be with you today. Let's start with Iran and what Kirby just said. You have to assume Iran isn't backing down from its threat of retaliation. That said, it has been 2 weeks. What's your assessment of the situation?
Well, clearly the Iranians have been stayed by the very significant show of force on the part of the United States. The United States has more combat aircraft in the Middle East now than the entire Israeli Air Force. All that being said, the Iranians have vowed revenge, and something ugly is likely to come at a time of their own choosing. There's simply no way that the Iranians are going to let the assassination of Ismail Haniyeh, which they have pinned on the Israelis, to go by unanswered. And so there are a number of options for the Iranians to retaliate. And I expect that they will avail themselves to one of those, and it will be punishing.
Stephen, what do you think the potential is right now for an all-out regional war over there?
Well, we are observing a regional war. The question is whether there's an intensification of it. And I think that clearly the nature of the Iranian response will tell us the direction of it. There is a very significant risk of escalation between the Israelis and the Iranians. If the Iranians do a lot of damage to Israel, Israel will have to respond. And there you go, up the escalation ladder. If we're asking whether the Saudis, the Emiratis, and others will get involved in this conflict, I think it's unlikely. I think this is something that is between Israel and Iran, and by extension, Israel's axis of resistance and the United States. But it will be, what we're looking at is the potential for an intensification of something that has already engulfed parts of the region.
Yeah, I want to turn now back to Ismail Haniyeh. He was widely considered the primary leader of Hamas since 2017 and was the chief negotiator for Hamas for the Qatari-brokered ceasefire deal with Israel. How do you think the current talks will be productive if Hamas is not present?
Yeah, Ismail Haniyeh was leader of the political office of Hamas, and therefore he was responsible for these negotiations. But the real power center is in Gaza with Yahya Sinwar. And Sinwar has been skeptical of ceasefire negotiations for many months now, believing that Hamas is actually winning this conflict and that there is really no need for a ceasefire. So the fact that he is not enthusiastic about it, and that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel is dependent upon parties that are opposed to a ceasefire and want to prioritize the destruction of Hamas, would suggest that despite a reconvening of these talks, they're unlikely to yield results.
Yeah, and I know that you posted on X recently that neither Israel or Hamas really want a ceasefire deal. Talk to us more about that.
Well, as I said, Yahya Sinwar believes he's winning the conflict. He's engaged in a total war in the delegitimization of Israel, and delegitimization in the eyes of the international community is significant. And that's part of the total war that they are fighting. And the hardliners in the Israeli government don't want a ceasefire either, because that would interfere with their ultimate goal, which is the resettlement of the Gaza Strip. So it's very hard to imagine that Netanyahu can bring those parties along to a ceasefire, and Sinwar doesn't seem interested in it. Although it's important to recognize that Hamas, although not at the table, is in Doha and has indicated that it is willing to hear out what negotiators have come up with, and that Netanyahu, ahead of these talks, broadened, however slightly, the mandate of his negotiators to move on a ceasefire. But still, there doesn't seem to be a real basis for agreement here.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Stephen, thank you so much for weighing in. Always appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, back here in the U.S., the president of Columbia University is stepping down following a wave of protests on campus this past spring. Manoush Shafiq faced heavy scrutiny for her response to the pro-Palestinian protests that gripped the Ivy League school for weeks. The announcement comes as schools across the country brace for possible future demonstrations as students return to campus in the coming weeks. In her resignation letter, Shafiq noted progress in a number of areas, but said it was difficult to overcome divergent views across the community. community. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin is facing political pushback for his recent order revoking a negotiated plea deal for accused 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and two other co-defendants. But Senate Judiciary Committee Chair Dick Durbin is calling on Secretary Austin to reconsider. In a letter to the secretary, Senator Durbin wrote, quote, "We have a legal and moral obligation to deliver justice for these family members rather than false promises that these commissions will ever deliver more. I urge you to hear from the prosecutors who determined that securing guilty pleas was the best available path to justice. The plea deal would have spared the defendants the risk of the death penalty. It generated strong opposition among Republicans and Democrats, as well as the White House. The U.S. has held the 9/11 suspects without trial for more than two decades at Guantanamo Bay. A military judge overseeing the case is examining whether it was legal for Secretary Austin to rescind plea agreements. On a development tonight, as Ukraine claims to have taken control of a Russian town in the Kursk region.
The search and elimination of the enemy in Sudya and three other settlements has been completed. To maintain law and order and ensure the priority needs of the population, a military commandant's office was created in the controlled territories.
Well, the town of Sudya is the largest that Ukraine has seized thus far. Before the war, it had a population of around 5,000 people. Reports say Russian reserve troops have arrived in the region and are fighting back some of the advances. All right, now to the Caribbean, where Hurricane Ernesto strengthens and moves towards Bermuda. Ernesto is set to become a major Category 3 storm, dropping 4 to 8 inches of rain. Earlier this week, it slammed into Puerto Rico, leaving almost half the island with no power or water. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including extreme vigilance. The French government takes precautions for the solemnity of the Assumption. We have the details. And a group of pro-life pregnancy centers makes a court appearance as part of a lawsuit against New York Attorney General Letitia James. France say that on the solemnity of the Assumption of Mary, there is, quote, a very high terror threat to religious events and places of worship. One report says government officials are urging extreme vigilance. The country's minister of the interior says sites traditionally associated with Marian devotions, such as Our Lady of Lourdes, face particular danger, and government officials are asked to be in close contact with religious sites. Well, a group of pro-life pregnancy centers made an appearance at a court in Buffalo, New York today. It is part of their lawsuit against State Attorney General Letitia James. The groups accused James of abusing her authority by censoring pro-life pregnancy centers for telling women about the option of abortion pill reversals. In May, James sued the 11 faith-based centers, alleging that they promoted misleading statements about abortion pills. And for more, we turn now to Gabriella McIntyre, legal counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom, which is representing the pro-life groups. Gabriella, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it. A lot to get to, but first, for those who have not been following the original case, tell us a little bit more about it and what Attorney General Letitia James, what her objective is here.
Sure. So a little bit of background. Back in May, the Attorney General sued 11 pro-life faith-based pregnancy centers and Heartbeat International, which is a network of affiliated centers, because of their statements, which are both positive and truthful, about the safety and efficacy of what's known as abortion pill reversal. And she's attempting to censor their speech about this life-saving option, and in doing so is preventing women who no longer want to go through with a chemical abortion from even hearing about the option. And so our clients also make those same statements, and their speech is being chilled because they're all the while at risk of also being targeted for litigation by the Attorney General. And that's impermissible under the First Amendment. So that's why we sued.
Yeah, and tell us a little bit more why that was so important to you all to do that. And what happened in court today?
Yeah, so to your first question, I mean, it's extremely important. Women deserve to know all of the options that are before them when they're considering how to proceed with their pregnancy. If a woman does not want to continue with a chemical abortion, she deserves to know that there's an option out there that could potentially save her child. And in 5,000 cases plus at this point has saved unborn children in about 5,000 cases. And it's also been shown statistically and through studies to have a 64 to a 68% success rate. And so today in court, what was on the docket was a hearing on our motion for preliminary injunction. And basically what that is that we are asking the court during the interim, while this lawsuit proceeds on the merits, to stop the Attorney General or bar the Attorney General from bringing an enforcement action against our centers, the clients that we represent, for their speech on abortion pill reversal.
Gabriella, what's at stake here?
Unborn lives and very much the ability of pro-life pregnancy centers to be able to speak about this life-saving option. We have one woman in our complaint who heard about the option of abortion pill reversal through one of the websites of the centers who's being sued currently by the Attorney General. Had she not heard about the information regarding abortion pill reversal, the life of her child likely would not have been saved because she would not have heard about that option. And so very much important, the free speech rights of these pro-life pregnancy centers, and also just the implications of this. This truly is life-saving treatment that women deserve to know about.
And quickly, before I let you go, Gabriella, what's next in the case?
Well, we have yet to hear from the judge since the hearing was just today on the motion for preliminary injunction, but we do expect probably within the span of maybe 2 to 4 weeks, maybe a little longer than that, to hear from the judge. And so hopefully we'll have a favorable decision on that and we'll be able to proceed on the merits of the case, where the Attorney General will then answer our complaint.
All right. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. We'll continue to follow this as well. God bless.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Five people, including two doctors, have been charged in the death last year of actor Matthew Perry. Also charged is Perry's former personal assistant. The star of the hit series Friends was found face down in a hot tub last October. His autopsy found that the amount of ketamine in his blood was in the range used for general anesthesia during surgery. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, miraculous rescue. How Virgin Mary's house was taken from Nazareth to Italy. We have that story. Plus, a group of sisters helping the poorest of the poor for 60 years. We have the details.
May his eternal word be proclaimed.
On this day, 43 years ago, Mother Angelica flipped the switch, marking the on-air launch of EWTN. We are thankful for the work our founder has put into turning a monastery garage into a television studio. And now EWTN broadcasts 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to more than 435 million television households around the world. And we are honored to continue her work on the first Catholic satellite television station. Pope Francis reminds the faithful that the Blessed Virgin Mary leads us toward eternal life.
È bella questa espressione del Vangelo, si mette in viaggio.
In his address for the Solemnity of the Assumption, Pope Francis said the Blessed Virgin should never be considered a motionless statue. Instead, she is our hard-working companion, and if we follow her lead and ask for her help, she will bring us on our quest toward heaven with the Lord. Well, it is a tiny brick house with a large legacy. It is believed the Blessed Virgin Mary was raised there and received the Annunciation there. By there, we mean Nazareth. So how did it get to Italy, where the devotion to the Holy House began? EWTN Vatican journalist Magdalena Valinska-Reedy has some of the answers.
Perched on a hilltop town in central Italy and enclosed within a Renaissance basilica, stands the Holy House of Loreto.
This is the House of Mary, where she lived and where she received the Annunciation. And in this sense, it is also the home of the mystery of the Incarnation. For this reason, it is one of the greatest Marian shrines in the world, due to its relic and its antiquity.
For centuries, numerous artistic depictions fueled the belief that angels miraculously carried the Holy House from Nazareth to Loreto in 1294. Others held that the Holy House was brought to Italy at the end of the Crusades, like many other relics from the Holy Land. In fact, in 1900, a priest found records in the Vatican archives indicating that a Byzantine Greek family named Angelos, which translates to angels in English, rescued Mary's home during the Muslim conquest of 1291.
There is documentary evidence that indicates that the house was transported to this location by sea through human initiative, rather than by the ministry of angels. However, the angels signify a special protection from God, who wishes to preserve this house, which commemorates the mystery of the Incarnation, and thus it is a most precious relic.
Regardless of how the house arrived to Italy, there is little doubt that its walls are those of the Grotto of the Annunciation in Nazareth. Studies have shown that the stones making up the walls are not native to its current location and were not cut according to local Italian methods. The most convincing evidence is the discovery of ancient Christian and Marian graffiti markings on the Loreto walls, similar to those in ancient Judeo-Christian churches in Palestine. Because of its remarkable history and sacred significance, millions of people visit the Holy House every year, where miracles and conversions are continuously recorded.
People come from all parts of Europe, as well as from the Americas, Africa, Asia, Japan, and China. We have guides in 13 languages to address various requests. So it is an international sanctuary with a vibrant devotion to the Mother of God and the mystery revealed in the House of Mary.
Many saints and popes have visited the shrine, such as Pope San John Paul II, who once described the Holy House of Loreto as the true Marian heart of Christianity. In Rome, Magdalena Volinskariedi, EWTN News Nightly.
And finally tonight, on this day, August 15th, 1964, on the Solemnity of the Assumption, the Sisters of Mary was formed in South Korea by Father Aloysius Schwartz. He founded the group of religious sisters to help serve the poorest of the poor in the spirit of the gospel. And now, 60 years later, the Sisters of Mary are spread throughout the world, helping the homeless, the sick, and underprivileged children in countries like Mexico, Korea, and Tanzania through their Girls Town and Boys Town schools, which provide free education and vocational programs, as well as spiritual development.
We are looking the poorest of the poor to help them and to plant the love of God in their heart, and finally to save their souls.
Sister Margie has been with the Sisters of Mary for 40 years, caring for the most vulnerable from womb to tomb through a variety of charity programs aimed at helping those in the most impoverished regions of the world.
I am now actually serving our Tanzanian community in Africa. We are starting to build a boys' town there, boys' school, for 1,200 the Tanzanian boys for middle school and senior high school, those who cannot have opportunity to study.
Children, she says, that don't even have the basic necessities.
Usually they don't have water system in their house. They don't have electronic. They don't have power in the house. They live in darkness. They live without water. And they don't have food. Many families, they don't eat even one time a day.
And lack of food isn't the only issue facing these children that the Sisters of Mary serve in Tanzania.
There are terrorists, Muslim terrorists. There is wild animals. There's witchcraft. There's depravity.
Kevin Wells is Vice President of Public Relations at World Villages for Children. He's been working with the Sisters of Mary for more than 4 years now and recently traveled to Tanzania documenting the sisters' selfless work in one of the most impoverished and dangerous areas of the world.
Human trafficking by one's own family is big. That's why the sisters climb mountains, take boats on the islands, go into the brush where there's animals, to try and get to the most vulnerable.
Risking their lives, he says, to save the lives of children and give them a second chance. The Sisters of Mary do that by being spiritual mothers to the children and helping to nurture their body, spirit, and mind, providing them safe and stable shelter, nutritious meals, teaching them the Catholic faith, and educating them at their boarding schools.
So basically they do four activities while they are in boarding school. They study, they play, they pray, they work. They come from darkness, and they don't know if there is a future. They don't know even the meaning of hope or ambition. After 6 months or 1 year, they come to me and they say, I like to be a designer, I like to be an architect, I like to be a priest.
They're doing incredible work. And for more information on the Sisters of Mary and to find out how you can help, log on to worldvillages.org. And to learn more about their founder, Father Aloysius Schwartz, check out the book Priest and Beggar, The Heroic Life of Venerable Aloysius Schwartz. It is available on the EWTN Religious Catalog. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.